Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 10th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well. Very well. So, D.R., our gentle neighbors to the north, in the country of Canada, there was an election recently in a place called Alberta. Now, for the geographically challenged among us, in Canada, it's a federation of provinces which roughly are akin to states in the United States, although up in Canada, the provinces have much more power, I believe, within the federal organization. And, of course, the provinces of Canada, I won't be able to name them all, but there's British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Quebec, Newfoundland, right? They're places you've heard of. Alberta, of course, is the home of the tar sands, right? That's the place where all of this ugly stuff that climate hawks have been talking about for years really comes home to roost, right? There's tar sands everywhere. In particular, the I can't think of the name of what the specific name of the tar sands up in Alberta, but that's where the Keystone XL pipeline comes from, right? So you got this huge province in Canada, somewhat politically akin to Texas, right? They're committed to fossil fuels. That's how they put food on the table and pay the mortgage. And they had an election, DR. And so tell me, what happened in the Alberta election this past week?
Well, it was a pretty big shock by the new, you know, the news coming out of Canada on the elections on May the 5th, where the new Democratic Party, which is probably the most progressive party in Canada, won and unexpectedly won a majority of seats in the provincial legislature. This ousted the Progressive Conservative Party, which had been in charge in Alberta for 4.5 decades.
And the Progressive Conservatives being, you know, they have these funny names. The Progressive Conservatives are the rock rib conservative sort of correspondence to the American Republican Party, right?
Exactly, okay. And people have noted that the new Democratic Party really could be considered something closer to the Green Party in the United States, more so than the United States Democratic Party.
Let me just say to inoculate both of us, DR, we don't know much about Canadian politics.
So, exactly.
So we only know what we read in the paper here, right?
I saw somebody make the comparison to what would happen if Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate in 2012 and 2016, became governor of Alabama. And it would be a sea change on that level. And as D. Smog Blog has noted, that's a sea change that has apparently caused a bit of a consternation within the fossil fuel industry in Alberta, which seems to be predicting gloom and doom, absent a lot of evidence that will in fact be the case for that industry.
Really, really. So I guess then the question then comes, so there's an election in Canada, people in Alberta kick the old bums out, put the new bums in. The new bums are more politically attuned to, I guess, what I would think should happen, how the world ought to be viewed. But the real question for climate hawks in the United States is, what are the implications for the Keystone XL pipeline? The Keystone XL pipeline has become an iconic fight here. We're still talking about it, right? This is a big deal. It's on President Obama's desk. There's court cases up and down all through Nebraska and all those states. What does it mean if all of a sudden the leader, the political leader of Alberta, is, I think she said, right? She said that she's, this is a, her name is Notley, right?
Yes, Rachel Notley.
What is it?
Rachel Notley.
Rachel Notley. She basically said they're not going to be lobbying for the Keystone XL pipeline?
Yes, that was reported in thinkprogress.org that Notley is opposed to KXL and she has pledged to stop spending taxpayer money to lobby for it from Washington, D.C. She is, however, not opposed to other pipelines, making the argument that they're a better alternative to crude by rail. And there was a great piece by Brad Plumer in Vox explaining, you know, what sort of implications this will have for the pipelines. And Brad Plumer noted that, quote, that Notley's declaration that she would no longer lobby for KXL in Washington, quote, may be less significant than it first appears. After all, if Obama blocks the pipeline, it won't be because of insufficient lobbying by Alberta's government. It will be because Alberta's oil sands have a reputation for being terrible for climate change. And also noted that Notley isn't broadly anti-pipeline. There are some other pipelines that she supports. Uh-huh. However, as Diesbog blog points out, that the overall effect in terms of both tar sands and the fossil fuel industry will be that the fossil fuel industry won't automatically get every single thing it wants from the new government. There won't be this sort of knee-jerk sucking up to the industry, and that there'll be more of a fair and balanced approach, so to speak, to that industry.
So I guess the follow-on question, since we're pretending to be Canadian political pundits here, do you think that this is a lasting sea change that reflects some fundamental rethinking of the politics of the state of Alberta, or do you think it's just a... Sort of a spasm of frustration that will be reversed in the next election and we'll go back to the old fossil fuel cronies?
That's a good question. The observations have been all over the place. There's been a lot of speculation that Alberta's demographics are changing and that you have younger and more progressive-minded people moving into Alberta, people who are not automatically knee-jerk pro-fossil fuel. There's a belief that people are just getting tired of the perceived cronyism and hackerama that was occurring under the progressive conservative leadership. So it's unclear at this time. I think a lot of it will simply depend on Rachel Notley's leadership. Mm-hmm. Notley going back to the issue of the fossil fuel industry, she said that she's going to work with the industry, but again, there's the implication that she will not automatically suck up to it. Right. And you do have to wonder how many people in Alberta, are sort of blithe or not concerned about what will happen to future generations. How many of them do realize that this stuff is dirty, right, and this stuff is probably not the best energy source going forward? Yeah. And I do wonder how much this will impact the whole issue of Canada's role in the Paris climate talks later this year, because it's been pointed out for years that Alberta played a pretty big role in getting Canada to basically give two middle fingers to the Kyoto Protocol and to basically disregard any serious action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And you do wonder if could this be a domino effect in Canadian politics, going into some of their other major elections this year, and what kind of impact that might have, if any, on the Paris climate talks.
That's a really interesting point because, I think most of the other provinces in Canada might, perception is they're more neutral on these questions. Alberta is really the oil, petro state, so to speak. And if they are not governed by, if not as fiercely governed as they have been in the past, maybe that's a good thing for the Paris Accords.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Definitely. We will keep an eye on that, huh?
The only thing that should spring from the ground is hope, not oil.
So speaking of international agreements, DR, let's change our acronyms a little bit here. People should know that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is back in the news. In fact, back in our discussion, it's been popping up recently. I guess President Obama is going to try, I think tonight, make the defense for the TPP at the Nike sneaker plant out on the west coast someplace. There's lots going on. I think that the report that I heard was that the Senate has passed a bill to somehow demand to be participating in the agreement with Iran, the nuclear agreement with Iran, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, having passed that, the Senate can now turn its attentions to the fast-track authority, I think, TPA,
I believe it's called.
Say again?
TPA, Trade Partnership Authority, I believe
it's called. Trade Partnership Authority. Okay, TPA, which, of course, is this famous fast-track authority that President Obama wants to negotiate this terrible TPP treaty, right? Mm-hmm. So let me just, again, just to reset everybody back to what we're talking about. TPP is a trade agreement with the Pacific Rim, right? It's the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yep.
There are many reasons to oppose it. From a climate hawk's perspective, the biggest reason to oppose it is because there are mechanisms said to be involved in this secret draft that nobody can see because it's you know, it's held confidentially, that would allow oil companies to sue the United States to recover money lost if the United States put a carbon tax in place, which would mm-hmm. just be terrible. There's lots of other reasons to oppose the TPP, from labor rights and IP rights, all kinds of things. There's many people that are coming to oppose it. But as is typical with these big trade agreements, the president is given something called fast-track authority, where his administration can negotiate in secret and then present a finalized draft to the Congress, which they can either pass by a single up or down vote without amending the treaty at all, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the president is asking for. Mm-hmm. And so tell me, DR, is that a good idea? Is that something that we should approve and smile upon, or does it give us heartburn?
It's a very bad idea, and it's interesting to see that in addition to some elected officials such as Representative Alan Grayson of Florida basically saying that, you know, we should think twice and think long and hard about fast track. It was reported on May the 6th that Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama wrote a letter the day before to President Obama raising questions about the push for fast track authority and basically saying that everything in the TPP should be made public record before the Senate votes on fast track. The way things are reported...
That's a special distinction. Before they vote on the fast track authority, somehow... Again, it gets very confusing, but the fast track authority would call for the treaty itself, the TPP mm-hmm. treaty, to be public for a couple of months, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so Senator Sessions is basically saying that, you know, that the public should know everything about the TPP even before we get to step two being whether to allow the TPP to go through. Step one is whether to grant President Obama fast track authority, and he's basically saying that there needs to be full openness, full transparency about what the TPP will do. And, you know, as the old saying goes, sunshine is the best disinfectant. And there is a belief that if the American public knew fully what was in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, people would be, you know, grabbing their pitchforks and torches, so to speak, and demanding that this thing not go through.
Well, and I think that's a view that we share, but it's right. It appears. So everything is from appearance now, because everything about this treaty is secret, right? But it clearly mm-hmm. looks like the United States government is going into negotiations side by side with multinational corporations, right? Mm-hmm. The multinational corporations are at the table of these secret negotiations because they do the trading, but union groups, environmental groups, immigration groups, all these other people, they are not at the table, right? Because it's too secret for people like you or I to know what's going on. The only people that should be allowed in are the corporations. So I would say, you know, mm-hmm. one way to make this whole thing better is for the fast track authority to be granted, but to allow players besides corporations, or either take the corporations out, so it's only the United States government doing the negotiation, or allow unions and environmental groups in so they mm-hmm. can see what's going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, this whole TPP discussion can really get confusing, and it's, you know, for most people, it's not that terribly interesting, right? Trade rules about, you know, how much corn you can import and how much steel we can sell you mm-hmm. are not that interesting a thing, but there are fundamental issues at stake, and I guess I'd argue that everything I've seen on TV, right, which is where most people get their news, simply mm-hmm. talks about this as the United States in terms of union jobs. You know, that's very yep. important. But I think the framing is completely wrong because, as near as I can see, it's corporations that are driving the agenda. The corporations mm-hmm. want this. That's what the negotiation is about. And that's what you can't get your hands around because everything's so secret.
Exactly, exactly. And it's interesting to see how from so many different perspectives there are people raising questions about fast track authority. We've mentioned before, you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren raising issues about fast track authority. It's interesting to see, you know, in recent days it was reported that the new presidential candidate Carly Fiorina is giving a thumbs down to the prospect of fast track authority.
Oh, really?
And just seeing how people can come from a number of different perspectives to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, NAFTA didn't exactly work out well for the United States, and there are other trade agreements that were basically, you know, we were promised sunshine and roses and lollipops and unicorns, and all we ended up getting was crap. So basically, we might want to hold off on going forward with this.
One of the things that you know, in all fairness, because it's always good to understand what your opponents are saying, mm-hmm. people who want the fast track authority and want the TPP. And this, I think, is being said by genuine patriotic Americans and not corporations, right? Mm-hmm. But the idea is that if we don't formulate some sort of agreement with Japan, Asia, Taiwan, all those sort of, you know, countries on the Pacific Rim of South America, if we don't make that agreement, then China is going to set the rules because mm-hmm. they're going to be the biggest economy over there. And mm-hmm. so that part of the game is to make sure that the United States has a role in establishing what these markets will look like and not allow the future to be written in Beijing. Mm-hmm. Which, okay, that's a good point. But it just seems as if the process by which this whole thing is going is I think Elizabeth Warren said it best, right? If the process is rigged, the results are going to be rigged.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
And it's the fast track authority is just not a good process for this kind of deal because it's been proven multiple times that when you cut out the voices of climate hawks among many others, you're mm-hmm. going to end up with a problem.
And for the people who say that, you know, we shouldn't see everything just yet, you know, what is wrong with transparency? Why is it that we have to be dependent on WikiLeaks? Nothing against WikiLeaks, but why is it we have to be dependent on WikiLeaks to know what's in this thing? If WikiLeaks didn't exist, we'd be pretty much screwed, wouldn't we?
When we get to, you mentioned the Paris negotiations for this treaty in Paris, you know every draft of that climate treaty is going to be all over the newspaper every
exactly.
day. And
exactly.
every little comma that gets moved around will be subject to public scrutiny. Exactly. But on the other hand, this trade deal, too secret. Can't really talk about that. That'll screw things up.
It's amazing that you know, in these secret things that Senator Sherrod Brown talks about, where you know there's all this high level security that you have people around you so you can see where the TPP is. You wonder in this day and age how come someone can't take like a cell phone camera and snap something and then blow it up so we can actually see what's in the current version of the TPP. It's just so strange. It's the sort of odd sort of you know Da Vinci Code type of thing. Just yeah. sort of secret TPP. TPP society somehow. It's just weird.
The Illuminati TP.
Exactly.
All right, so there's one more. So we're on to a depressing topic. Well, actually, the Alberta topic was interesting, the TPP. So I guess the take-home lesson for climate hawks is to call your representative and tell them that they mm-hmm. should not vote for the fast-track authority of the mm-hmm. For the TPP. That would in particular be your senator. And you can look them up. You type in U.S. Senate into Google, and it'll bring you right, you know, you'll get to an email contact pretty soon. And all you mm-hmm. have to do is say, you know, please do not grant fast track authority. That's all you
exactly.
have to write.
Slow down fast track.
Slow down fast track. So, DR, I guess the other topic that has come this week is that the Earth has, officially and finally moved above the 400 parts per million level of carbon dioxide pollution. Mm-hmm. For listeners to this show, you know that about this time last year, the world first breached the 400 ppm level. And how do mm-hmm. we know that? Well, because we know that the experiment that's on top of the Hawaiian volcano, the Mauna Loa volcano. They've been measuring the carbon dioxide in the middle of the Pacific Ocean since 1957, I think, and they've been seeing it. And for the past 30 days, the carbon dioxide level has been above 400 parts per million. There's a daily variation, and there's a monthly variation, all kinds of variations. But we have this consistently above 400 ppm, which is scientifically no different from being at 399 ppm, but it is a huge sort of iconic moment. Right. This is a milestone. Right. We're not talking about 400 plus ppm, and of course the 450 number is the one that's really scary. Right. 450 is when you're committed to terrible warming. Mm-hmm. Right? And so tell me, what do you know about the 400 ppm issue?
I was relieved to see how much coverage it was getting because of this of the significance of it. And the only thing I would quibble about the coverage is that there weren't a lot of stories that put into context that things need to go back to 350 parts per million. You know, we need to do some subtraction and division of this, not addition and multiplication.
and just so that people know. You're right. You're quite right that at the time of the American Revolution, which came 10 years after James Watt invented the steam engine, right, which was the 1760s, the carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere was 285, right? And since that time, we invented the steam engine, we built trains, we started making steel, we invented the Model T. We've gone from 285 in the year of 1776 to more than 400 ppm now in 2015, and it's only ramping up. So it's a watershed, huh?
Exactly. there'll be a lot of watershed and a lot of live sheds.
A lot of tear shed.
This goes up, exactly.
Well, you heard it here first. So, DR, we got to leave it there. We'll tell our listeners they can check out the links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can leave us a comment. Tell us what we ought to be thinking and talking about. Please do. You can find us on Facebook. We're /massclimateaction. You can listen to our show there if you click through to the blog. It'll bring you to the blog. Please share us and let us know what you think about it at us there as well. You can like us. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, or you can find this on iTunes under the podcast heading, search for Mass Climate Action. Please subscribe. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Don't forget to call your senator. Goodbye, and see you next week.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.